Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show tonight dealing with metaphysics and spirituality, as usual. Tonight's show is the, I believe it's going to be the end of the series, dealing with the living earth, part seven. And if you would like to, you can call in anytime during the show. And the number is 877-876-5227 if you are in the U.S. If you're in Canada, try 888-815-9756. And if you have comments that you think are in some way germane to the subject or just to the general show's idea, you can do so at any time during the show. Now, let me kind of put together what this series has been about. I am not going to spend the whole show today talking about the six prior shows because that wouldn't make much sense, I think, for most of our listeners. But I will let you know that in general, the idea behind the entire series has been that our planet, as every planet in the universe, has a purpose. It is not just there by, you know, oh, it's a piece of dirt, rock, whatever, and it's running around and has gases on it and stuff. It has a purpose, and the purpose is to help to develop some type of life, and that life has various levels of development, and the life itself in some way adds to the growth of the creator of this universe. So I'm saying that there is a being, you can call it whatever you want, God or otherwise, that is behind the development of universes, and ours in particular. Our planet has a being other than God, which is sort of like a subcategory. It's a being much more advanced than human beings, but that has a purpose that falls in line with what I said, but is sort of a subcategory. And this being and other beings that help out are attempting to grow life in certain ways. Earth, in particular, has a mission, you might say, a number of them. One of them is to eventually develop humans in physical form. Not all life is in physical form. As a matter of fact, most life does not exist in physical form within our universe. There are seven dimensions of time and space. And the physical dimension is the basement. That's where we are right now. But we don't live in that dimension even all of our lifetime. We live in other dimensions of time and space. As we die from one and leave body and senses that sense that dimension, we use a more subtle body and senses in higher dimensions, and etc. So as we develop from one dimension to another, we're dropping a body, becoming more intensely focused on the body that senses in the dimension and the time and space that we exist in, and those senses become dominant, and then we can perceive what's going on around us in that dimension. That's the purpose. The purpose is for us to go through that because we are multidimensional, but only one dimension at a time. The beings that we are intended on growing into, which we're going to talk about in today's show, that's what today's show is going to be focused on, are beings that are multidimensional at the same time. That means they can sense what's going on in more than the primary dimension they may be located on. And to them, it may not even be that way. It may be all dimensions that they sense on are equal, and so it's hard for them to even decipher the difference between, oh, I'm here or I'm there, because they can be in all dimensions that they exist within at the same time. Human beings at the present time cannot do that in this world. As a matter of fact, by definition, only rarely can human beings do that at all, because truly, once a being is capable of being sensitive to and able to perceive multiple dimensions at the same time, they are no longer human. Okay, so if someone can do that on a regular basis and consistently at the same time, they would be superhuman or whatever you want to call them. Some people call them masters, some people call them, well, there's all kinds of names, but it doesn't really matter what the name is because the definition is the important thing. Again, normally human beings can only sense and only perceive the dimension that they are most focused on in their livingness. And for us right now, that would be the physical dimension, right here, right now, where we are. And when we die from a dimension, we just move to usually the next highest, and we can sense in that dimension, time and space. If we become something beyond human, we can do it in more than one dimension at the same time. That's our purpose, in part, for being here, is to grow to that level. It takes a tremendous amount of development in many structures, including some people call brains. Well, our brain has to become linked from one dimension to the other in virtue, in light, in order for us to perceive all these other dimensions of time and space. So we've got to have like multidimensional brains, we have to be a multidimensional bodies and senses. They all get connected together. There is a way to connect them together in darkness. But then, instead of becoming a superhuman, you become a subhuman. But you may appear to have some unusual capabilities and powers, but they're very destructive to life rather than helpful. We won't talk much about that tonight. Okay, so that's part of what we're doing here. And Earth has been developing the senses and then consciousness of life for billions of years, about 4 billion years, to be accurate. And it has started and went very, very slowly for billions of years. It started to really accelerate, oh, give or take, about 600 million years ago. And then since that time, it has been increasingly accelerating to the point where today, humans of today, within thousands to, say, tens of thousands of years from now, can be, I'm not saying they all will be, members of the next kingdom. They will have this multidimensional ability to sense and perceive their worlds of, we'll say, livingness, which will include this world, the physical, a part of this world that humans mostly can't sense right now, which is the etheric, which is like the electromagnetic part of the physical world. And then they'll be able to also sense the astral, the lower and higher monastic or mental worlds, all together at the same time. We are going to eventually live in those worlds, but only as we die from the one that is lower in dimensionality than the next. The more dimensions there are, the more skill and difficulty there is, in a sense, perceiving its surroundings. We live in what some people call a three-dimensional world. I call it, and some physicists call it, a one-dimensional world, but it doesn't matter. How you count dimensions, it's the lowest place you can be, and it doesn't matter, you're not going to get any lower in this, so this is it. So we actually have the least amount of sense while we're physically alive. When we die from this world and our astral senses dominate, we then perceive an extra dimension. And in some cases, some people would say we've doubled our dimensional capacity, which is a huge jump. Others might say we've increased it from 3 to 4. I like the double because I think it's more accurate. But in either case, it's a huge jump. And it changes our perspective considerably to live in the astral world as compared to the physical world. Now, there is a brief time for minutes to a few days or weeks where a person after physical death will live in the etheric world. You may have heard about this, of course. But that isn't a long enough time to even fully develop an etheric sense. Just enough, usually, to get by. But most people don't even fully develop that sense while they're etherically focused. So I don't really count it, but for those who get stuck there, it actually goes the opposite way. If someone were to spend a lot of time just in the etheric world with their physical body dead, the results are their etheric senses start to drop rapidly, and they can get stuck in the etheric world. We call them ghosts or people who are lost. They're not completely lost, but many times they get in a very, we'll say, almost like a etheric Alzheimer's condition of not understanding much of what's going on around them, their memory gets foggy, their sense of self mostly gets lost. That's a bad condition. And it rarely happens, by the way. But when it does, it's not good. Okay, so let's really deal with today's subject, because I think this is the most interesting part of the whole series. It's the future. It's about where we're headed and why, and what we're going to be doing to get there. One of our missions on Earth, which I started to talk about earlier, is to overcome a certain kind of evil. That evil is where the astral body and the mental body, particularly the lower mental body, become connected together in darkness. When that takes place, instead of it being that way, like a human being becomes a master because they've connected two parts of their bodies together, they become subhuman and become evil. We have a propensity on Earth for this condition. You might say, well, does that make us bad people? No. Earth was designed as a laboratory to produce this condition in the life that would eventually inhabit this world, and especially in human life. You might say, well, what kind of being would do that? Well, it's a being who invited and accepted souls to come to this planet voluntarily, that's us, and to choose to incarnate, and when we incarnate, we forget about why we're really here, to see if we can overcome this really harsh and really destructive condition that some of the rest of the universe has yet to encounter, but will within the next thousands to tens of thousands, and maybe even up to a million, depending upon years, depending upon where we're talking about within our universe. So it's sort of like a laboratory to overcome a future problem, not for Earth, but for the rest of the universe. Earth is like going through a great sacrifice. And the souls that came to this planet, us, have chosen to participate in this experiment, fully knowledgeable of the tremendously harsh conditions that this world will incur, and understanding part of the mission. And you might say, well, why don't we know that then? I would feel a lot better if I knew I was here, because this place really sucks. I would feel a lot better if I knew that I was here for a really, you know, a magnanimous and altruistic reason that you know, pin a medal on me for or something. Yeah, that's the point. We don't know it, because in order to have that understanding, we would need to have the greater consciousness of the being who we really are, which is our soul, and we lose that as a great sacrifice to focus in only one very small perceptual area, which is our physical senses most of the time, while we are physically alive, and are attempting to overcome it in physical form. Because in order for this planet to fully overcome this evil, it has to close the door to the evil, and that door goes from the lower astral dimension right to the physical. And if we don't achieve that result, the bottom line is the planet will fail in its mission. We have to actually beat evil in its worst condition, which is in this lowest realm, the basement where we are, in order to really be successful. And unfortunately, not because we're being punished, but because it's the nature of the physics, we can't keep our understanding, which is our consciousness, about the situation, because we lose too much of our perception, too much of our senses around us while we're physically alive. We just don't get it. Now, can we get it? Yeah, if you're listening to this show, I hope you are. And if you read some of the material I've written, if you read a lot of other stuff that's out there, you'll probably figure it out. Or if you live your life in a virtuous way and you don't read anything, it will come to you. So you don't have to study this. You don't have to meditate on it, although those things can help. You really need to act in ways, or interact in ways, that creates more light in yourself and in others, and helps them to do the same. If you do that, the things I'm telling you, you'll be able to tell me. You'll say, hey, you're not telling me anything I don't know, because I already got it. And I'd say, that's wonderful. Very happy to hear that. So that's really the point. That's where we can all help each other, and we all can move in a direction of, we'll say, serving this world as we truly came here to do. Now, you might say, okay, well, then where do we go from here? Because if this world still sucks and we're having problems, and in recorded history, we have consistently failed in this mission, by the way. Human history is plagued by long periods of destruction to life. Only short moments created by exceptional people have kept it going. It really hasn't been developed to any high levels by the masses. And the reason for that is because of the great difficulty encountered. It was planned and it is accepted that it will take hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes of each soul, incarnations as a human being, by each soul, to even get close to the point where the incarnated human kind of gets it and figures out, oh, gee, I'm here to create more light in myself and others and help them to do the same. You know, that's a really important place for someone to get to. And you might say, well, aren't some of us getting there? Some of us are. The problem is we're at a fairly low fractional level of the total population of the planet. And the fact of the matter is that why those few that do so much oftentimes move ahead and become a beacon for others, the whole planet still has to catch up. Because this is not an experiment for just a few to move ahead. It's an experiment to see if the majority, the vast majority, can move ahead. And that could take thousands of more years or longer, maybe tens of thousands, which should really put it on the brink, before the majority of humans are ready to move ahead and unify their senses for the dimensions I was speaking of earlier, and produce in themselves this capability we call superhuman or masters or whatever, and to no longer be affected by evil, and to, in effect, destroy evil. When evil can no longer infect humans, evil cannot exist on a planet, because it's only through the infection, we'll say, of human thought with evil thought that a planet goes evil. Before there were humans, there was a lot of struggle in the development of bodies that humans would eventually, to some extent, use. But there wasn't really evil. There was the coarseness and difficulty of a very, very violent and difficult planet. But there wasn't evil. Evil is where, through conscious methods, someone says, hey, gee, you know what? I want to destroy God, but they may also deny God's existence at the same time. I know that sounds contradictory. And I want to do so by destroying the growth of life, because that's what grows God, and I'm going to get rid of that. So they're often very destructive to life itself in enormous ways. I mean, the creative ways of evil are all about destroying life. That's the only way they're really creative, and even then it's limited. But still, that's where their focus is. So we, being humans that aren't affected by that, are here to stop that and to stop it completely, eventually. Now, with that understanding and realizing that we have to take our senses to a new level, we have to take our consciousness to a new level, this is no easy thing to do. To just unify even two chakras out of the seven in one body is a significant issue. And when I say unify, I'm not talking about permanently, because you can only permanently unify all the chakras, all the senses. Chakras are areas where senses exist. You can only do this permanently when it's done all at the same time. But you could do it temporarily using a thing called spiritual discipline. That's not somebody else doing it for you. A lot of people think discipline in that way. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about us doing it for ourselves. And what we do is we focus in on one or two senses at a time and try to get them to unify a little bit. So when they unify a little bit, they both improve. And there's kind of like a wave that goes out. And even the other senses that they're not being focused on at that time are somewhat helped. It's really amazing. It's a great thing, but not everybody is even close to that kind of decision in their life. Because in order to choose to spiritually discipline ourselves, we have to sacrifice the sense at times for things that we consider to be fun and exciting and pleasurable, at least at the moment. Many times these are not those things. The illusion is that they are. You know, the illusion is that having some kind of fling or doing some kind of thing that for the moment excites a sense is what life is about. But in reality, it tends to wear out the sense and to destroy it, making it less effective. But we think otherwise because we're in illusion. Illusion means that we have misinformation that we have misapplied and created wrong knowledge about how to use our own senses and what the information from those senses is telling us. So that's not a good thing by any stretch of the imagination. But to get around this takes quite a bit of effort. And without some conscious level of willing to sacrifice these things that people think that they want or should have, their desires being met, then it's almost impossible to unify even a couple senses for a short time. Which means that for an entire lifetime, while a person is physically alive, they may do virtually no unification of any senses. Because they have to make this conscious effort to do so, and so few people do that. Wow. And you might say, well, what about love? Doesn't love get you around? I thought love is, you know, virtue, a great virtue, and if you love others, it's a... Yeah, love does get you to a better place in this whole picture. But there's different kinds of love. Love that gives to others in ways that helps them to excite themselves through their senses, to be exorbitant in the use of a sense, to have a fling or to do one thing or another. That kind of love actually destroys other people's senses, and it doesn't get you anywhere. As a matter of fact, it actually may further destroy your own senses. It's sometimes called a self-focused or personalized love. And that kind of love does not provide a way of unifying the senses. It does for people who are relatively primitive or not well-developed. Move them a little bit towards the other kind of love, which I'm going to tell you about. So you've got to kind of make a baby step into this wrong kind of love before you can get to the right kind of love. Now, the right kind of love helps others to use their senses in the correct way. It doesn't focus on our own senses. It focuses on helping others to use their senses in the best way possible. So spiritual discipline is not about sitting around and thinking about how you're going to unify your senses. Quite the opposite. That's called spiritual ambition. Spiritual discipline is focusing out on trying to help and serve others to do that. Forgetting about our own senses or their state. Wow. A lot of you, I want you to think about what I just said, because that's a pretty big, big concept. And it's one of the things that probably is a big illusion for people who are tinkering around the edges of trying to spiritually discipline themselves. It's the most common mistake, at least in my experience from people who talk to me about it, that people make. As they say, well, I'm going to spiritually discipline myself. I'm going to sit and focus for hours about my own senses and how to unify them because I got that part down. And I'm going to make myself into a master and be this and be that. And I'm going to have all these special powers that I'm going to be able to do. Well, you know what? They're going to go in the opposite direction because it doesn't work that way. They have to become self-forgetful. They have to become humble. They have to be focused out on others and serving those others and not themselves. This is the key. How do we get others to understand that? Well, maybe listen to the show. It might help. I get one of the books I've written. If that doesn't work, there's 1,000 other ones out there. Some of them say the right thing. Some of them don't. The ones that don't say the right thing, I call the fake New Age stuff. You know, that's the stuff that says, hey, it's all about you. It's all about how you can get this or that. It's all about making yourself special, call yourself an avatar, become a great being. pay $1,500 or come to my lectures or do this or that and I'll give you a badge. You see, it doesn't work. It's no different than the guy behind the curtain that's going to give you a heart or give you this or that. None of that stuff works because it's all about you're forgetting who you are and focused on giving to others, and that's what produces that effect. In that same story, you know, if you're the Wizard of Oz, the people that come to you that have become already enlightened are already there. They just may not have recognized it because they've been so focused on everybody else. All you have to do is say, oh, by the way, did you know you already created yourself into a great being by focusing on others and helping them instead of yourself? That's why that story is so good, isn't it? All right, so when we look at this from a perspective of, we'll say, where we're headed, it is up to a very few at the present moment to bring a huge number, almost everyone on the planet, to even the slightest level of understanding what I've just been talking about. And the only ways this can be done is not through just talking about it. So what I'm doing here cannot achieve the results. You've got to also live your life that way. You've got to also, so be an example. You've got to work with others who are doing the same. You can't do it alone because it's too big of a job. And then, if you're really fortunate, those that need and want that kind of guidance will find you. That's how it's done. But the people you work with in this great vigil, they have to be somewhere in the same ballpark. Because if they're working against you, they'll just negate what you're doing. So be careful of who you associate with when you're doing this sort of thing. It's a great idea, a great collection of ideas, actually. At any rate, when we come back, I'll tell you much more about where we're headed, what the world is, how the world's going to change, good and bad, hopefully for good. And I think you'll find tonight's show even further more intriguing. So we will be back in, oh, I would say, about 2.5 minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, going now into the second half of the show. And I hope a lot of you have been sitting there kind of saying, wow, what's going to happen next? Yes, we're going to talk about the future of our world. And based upon what I told you in the first half, it's going to be how we can overcome the evils that exist on our planet and how we can make this experiment that we're in a true success, one that we as souls are trying desperately, really, to become the victors in. But we as humans, while we're physically alive, may be somewhat vague and lost about. And we need to also have some tolerance for those who are somewhat dark, but not necessarily evil. You can't have too much tolerance for people who have chosen to become evil, because unfortunately their path is already decided by them. And once that has happened, the only way they're going to get out of it is by, we'll say, coming to the conclusion themselves, which is done in one of two ways, which I'll explain during this second half. Okay, so now we're faced with an interesting dilemma, but one that has great opportunity and promise. And that is that the very fewest of people have to, in a proportionate way, guide billions towards a path that will overcome evil, especially the kama manasic, it's called, the astral mental kind of evil, which is a really nasty evil that leads to all kinds of things, including propaganda, which sometimes these days is called spin, and we even think it's neat for some reason. It's an untruthfulness in the way that we compose examples of our concepts, breaking our concepts up and making them untruthful over time. So we live a lie most of the time that we're physically alive, and some of the time we're astrally alive. And so it is a very, very difficult position, because the majority of people are doing some of this all the time. And we are actually born this way from one life to the next, because so many failed lifetimes have come about in a conglomerate fashion from prior civilizations that have been on Earth. Some of them historically accounted for, and other ones that are written about, but there's no historical account that has been recognized. So here we have a very, very complicated scenario, because what do you do when just a few have kind of got the way, but the many, the vast many, don't, and they can't perceive the few? They can't hear, they can't see, they can't understand that which may be much more accurate, but to them doesn't even exist, and they may even negate if they're dark and try to destroy if they're evil. So you have a complicated problem, and the solutions fall into these categories. First and probably foremost, how we exemplify the nature of our own reality is the most potent expression of our beingness. The reason for that is this is a physical universe based upon interaction or activity, and that is the dominant issue in terms of expressing God. That's going to bother some of you, because particularly the people who say, well, I go to my full moon meditation once a month, and I meditate for an hour every morning, and then I come home and I read. But you see, how much of you of that, those ideas, are you exemplifying in your life to others? Because that's what makes a difference in helping others, in serving others. And we're here to do that. We're not here to serve our own bodies and senses. We're here to serve others. And that's where it gets sticky. Now, for some, it's okay to spend some time and energy in the pursuits that I mentioned just a minute ago. But if you don't exemplify more than what you put in time and energy into those other pursuits, the results are going to be negative. Negative in the sense that your own consciousness will drop, your own senses will diminish, although you won't think they are, and you will not achieve the goals of your soul in coming here. Now, that's a problem, and I know some people don't believe what I'm saying. That's okay. So we have to become doers. We have to become creators. I call it co-creation with the God that we perceive around us, within us, and in others. If we are not co-creators, then the study of, the meditation of, the reflection of, the listening of, the even teaching of, any of these grand thoughts and ideas will not achieve the necessary goals for our planet to move ahead and for us to become something greater than the humans that we presently are. And you might say, but I read this religion, I read that religion, I read this particular thought on it, and they disagree with you. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you try it my way for a month, and your way for a month, carefully record the results, and be diligent in doing the different two ways, and then determine which is the truth. As a matter of fact, I think after a couple of days, you will figure it out. But give it a month, because people aren't that consistent in really trying things. And I think you will come to the conclusion that I'm suggesting is the truth. That takes some effort, I realize. And if there's anything I can be of help with, call me. I'm available. I'm available anytime, virtually. Well, maybe not any time, but if you call, somebody will answer and they'll say, well, he'll get back with you. You can call him back on this time. And I'll really talk to you. Don't email me complicated stuff because I don't really have the time to spend in emails. And the other problem is that emails are not dialogue. And these kinds of things require dialogue. Email is a monologue. You may think it's a dialogue, but it's really a monologue. And I need to discuss these things with people in real time. So you can email me something very simple, and I'll try to answer it in a very simple fashion. But if you need something about what we're talking about right now, you need a dialogue. So call me. No charge. I don't charge for it. Nothing. We'll just talk about how you can become more active, more co-creative with your creator. And if you think that that can't be done, just give me a call and I'll show you. A lot of people say, oh, there's nothing you can tell me that's co-creative, my creator. And after I tell it to them, they say, well, that would be really hard to do. I said, well, I didn't say it would be easier to, but you could do it, right? Oh, okay, yeah, I guess I could. All right. So it's really this concept of co-creation. Now, what happens when we become co-creative with our creator? Well, the first thing is we become super creative. It's something different than what normal people would call creation in humanity. Humanity is creative usually when there's a connection to the lower self, meaning that they're getting something in return. They're doing it for themselves, you know, kind of thing. You may not notice it right away, but it's there. And if you really, really look, you'll see it. That's the way most people are creative. So it narrows their creativity to what are called personal objectives and personal interactions. And those things, as I explained earlier about love, don't lead to the unification of sense, don't lead to an improvement in the ability to perceive and to create new knowledge, and then it doesn't lead to the ability to be conscious and use that new knowledge to co-create with our creator. That's what's missing. If you just do it personally about yourself, your lower self. Now, if you do it with your higher self, which is like a sort of the alter ego of your own soul, and if you do it for truly the benefit of many others, all others who can understand, and you're doing it to co-create with your creator, truly to create more of God in yourself and others, because this is the being ultimately that we are connected as one with, that puts us in one with all, actually, all life, then at that point, the unification of the senses start taking place, and you become a super creator. A super creator can do things that human beings almost certainly cannot. You become some, and I'm not talking about becoming a new being. I'm not talking about that point yet. I'm talking about before you get there, these are the steps. In each case of super co-creation, a human being is moving a step closer to becoming something outside of the human kingdom, beyond the human kingdom. And every step leads to more unification of sense, greater abilities in thought, things that people cannot even come close to conceiving. It's so big. It seems impossible. It's so big that most people don't see it because it's too big for them to perceive. But if they could perceive it, they would say, well, that person is not human. They're doing something that's superhuman, period. They would come to that conclusion. Rarely does it happen, though, because, again, it's so big they can't perceive it. So the person doing it is invisible. Invisible to them and all others that don't function at that level. You become blind when you have selfish senses. You become blind to those that don't. That's a scary thing, isn't it? But you can unblind yourself. You can become something much greater by working on the system of co-creation and becoming a super creator. What are the signs of super creation? Well, it's what some people would call creative genius. It's the ability to look at any difficulty or problem and almost in no time at all to come up with a solution to that problem that doesn't just solve that problem, but solves 100 others in ways that have never been connected probably forever in the past. It's unique, and it is beyond just a solving or problem solving. It's a kind of a new step for humanity. It is creation. And now it opens up so many vistas, so many new ways to live and to be, that the one thing that is being solved actually is these dozens or hundreds of things that are being solved through the same action of creation. That's the creation of God itself. And so you're co-creating with this being, and your creations are now being added to by God itself, so you are functioning beyond human, beyond maybe even superhuman in some respects, because you're being pumped up with the creation of God itself, which is open to endless bounds, can go as far as the being who's willing to co-create is willing. But that in that co-creation, there is always equal levels of sacrifice, equal levels of self-forgetfulness, equal levels of the willingness to take action in the face of the worst conditions, the worst odds. It is also a fearless condition. Those that are super creators, those who are co-creators with God, do not fear their actions. They only fear their inactions. They recognize that the only co-creation that is destructive is to ignore it, to ignore God, to ignore that which must be done. There is a little bit of a paradox here, and I'm going to tell you about it. Sometimes one must co-create in ways that destroys evil. And this is not easy to understand for some, because some people are very pacifist and believe that God is a God that never fights evil. Well, if that were true, we wouldn't be here, because evil would have already taken over. Thankfully, some brave beings who acted as their souls in the past have stood up to and fought evil in the physical dimension. In this dimension, you actually have to fight evil. You actually have to use some level of force in many circumstances to deal with evil. It is a difficult thing. Evil seeks to destroy life, and especially the growth of it. It seeks to destroy its own creator, which makes no sense because it can't exist without it, but it pretends like it doesn't exist or like it's super to its own creator. It invents a lot of excuses. Ultimately, if we're going to fight evil, we must have a fearless posture. What is a fearless posture? It's the recognition that super creation will always overcome evil. It's the understanding that super creation always beats out evil. And as long as we are super creating, we become impervious to the assaults of evil. That doesn't mean that evil can't harm us or damage us. It just means that ultimately evil cannot be victorious and that we will be. That, with that understanding, and with the understanding that there's no such thing as death, there's only moving from one dimension to another, evil has no power, has no control. It can't do anything. And it actually becomes less and less powerful because it gets its power from our fears. And that power is significantly reduced and eventually extinguished as we become super creators. We become fearless. And then evil can get power from us, at least. It can get power from others that we know or that we have some concern about or caring about, of course, but it can't get it directly from us. So there's the paradox. The paradox is that, in an odd way, with evil, we have to focus on limiting and eventually destroying the characteristic of evil that causes it to want to destroy the growth of life around it and its own God. We aren't protecting God. We are protecting the growth of God, which is the life around us, which includes human life. But not just human life. All life gets into this category. And we have to have an appreciation and love for all life at some level. Now, does that mean that we love evil because it is a form of life, even if aberrant? Yeah, you can love evil, and let me tell you how. You love evil so much that you recognize the best thing that can happen to that evil is that it becomes powerless and self-destructive, but not other-destructive, and that it reduces itself to levels of life that is commensurate with its consciousness. And at those levels of life, which might be a worm or some kind of insect or something, that it actually eventually will live as, it's the only kind of life that goes backwards, and then have to work its way up after a million years of being human again, that's its ultimate end. And we seek to allow it to do that for itself because that's its ticket out. That's how it's going to get out. It only has one other option. Before it has lost the majority of its human sense, it still has the option, while still exercising some level of humanity, to do exemplary human types of virtuous deeds, and to fight against all the evil within itself as well as that of its contemporaries around itself, and has to many times succumb to the destructive forces from its own karma, but still live its life as a human being. That's the option evil has before it has lost the majority of its sense, which makes it a human. Once it has lost the majority of that sense, it has no other options but to go back and live through lower kingdoms of life for very long periods of time, sometimes longer than a planet might even exist for. So it's quite an ordeal. And that the love is for those that are going to go through that, the great suffering that they're going to have, we can have some compassion for those levels of extreme suffering. Because those that practice that kind of evil will suffer beyond our imagination. That's what they're going to do. And we need to have some level of compassion for that level of suffering. Because we are all one, even those that have lost their humanity and have gone backwards. Oddly, that's a very difficult position to have, because sometimes those same evil beings have done terrible things to us and those we care about. But yet, we can have compassion for them. It is possible to develop it, recognizing that they ultimately will suffer worse consequences than any other being under any other circumstances. Human beings are amazing in that they have that choice. The choice is to be a co-creator with their creator, or to eventually, if they go down the dark path, to try to be a destroyer of their creator, which is impossible, by the way. But they have to learn that the very, very hard way. Human beings are the only beings in the universe that have that choice. Animals, plants, minerals, those kingdoms below us never have that choice. We have the choice, and anything that's beyond human is beyond that choice. They would never choose it because they realize how stupid it is. And they would realize that they aren't in illusion, so they would see no reason for that kind of activity. It's only humans. We are truly, some people call it, on the cross between darkness and light. We can choose either, because life has given freedom to choose in its thought and in its actions, if it can, to whatever level it can think, and to whatever level it can act. The freedom allows there to be creativity beyond that of the original creator. It allows us to make something that is different from the original creator. The creator has to limit itself to give us that freedom. Otherwise, it's such a great being, it would be all that there is, and then we would not enjoy it. But it chose to grow through its creations rather than through itself. We will learn to do the same someday. By becoming co-creators, we also learn to not take reward from our creations, not to pay attention to it as being part of who we are, but by becoming part of all else, by joining and becoming one with our Creator and all of the life that seeks to grow more of life. That's what we are doing in becoming super creators. The future for humanity is a future with a promise that the majority of people on this planet, it may take thousands of years, will become super creators. They will co-create with their creator, and they will do so in ways that will raise themselves into another kingdom higher than human, and will turn Earth from a relatively dark planet, an experiment that right now is losing to darkness and evil, into an experiment that shows a beacon of light to millions of other worlds of how to overcome the mental kind of darkness that is the worst kinds of evil that can be employed within a world. It has started, it is continuing to happen. In the last thousands of years, it has grown on Earth, but it will be extinguished by those who are co-creators. If there are enough of those people doing it, and if they are doing it in ways that I have suggested through this program. Well, with that thought in mind, I'm out of time. I wish I could create more time. That would be the next thing, huh? Well, the interesting thing is we do create time, but somewhat when we're teaching, based upon how others can understand what we're saying. Okay, so I want to mention that for Sunday, this coming Sunday, October 19th, I'm going to be on 1170 AM in the northeastern part of the country talking about the etheric dense physical chakras, so you can hear more about that subject, which we talked about somewhat tonight. And if you're not in that part of the country, you can tune into WDISAM.com radio from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Please tune in and listen in. Also, I want to mention that, Mimi's going to be teaching the next day on Monday, October 20th, over at Mesa Fiesta Borders from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. The topic is going to be on the chakras. Go and listen to her. It's very interesting, the things that she has to say, and who knows, maybe I'll drop in some time and say hello to everybody that comes. I'm still thinking about doing that, maybe even this Monday, who knows. So, for those of you who have heard today's program, I hope it has been a sense of urgency, but also a sense of, wow, I can really do this kind of thing. Again, I'm available. Just give me a call. I'm here. Okay, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.